When your company earns unlimited 2% cash back on all purchases with Capital One, that's serious business. So, Steven at SandCloud got a serious business card, the Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One.
We used our 2% cash back to help build our retail presence.
Savvy, Steven.
And we get big purchasing power, so our business can spend more and earn more.
The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/SparkCashPlus.
Come on in.
I'm Lainey.
And I'm Laura Beth.
And we are Steel Magnolias. Two sisters who love family, traditions, and all things Southern.
We've got plenty of room at our table, so pull up a chair.
Hi, Lainey.
Hi, Laura Beth.
Oh, my goodness. So, I was thinking about on the way over here to record that we have often said on our social accounts of things that, like, I want to try this recipe, or this looks good. Has anyone made this? We throw out a lot of things.
But we've made a lot, haven't we?
We need to circle back on some things.
We've made some things.
So, I mean, as recent as this weekend, I wasn't going to go way, way back. But yeah. Let's touch base on some things that we've made.
Recipes we've made.
You made some killer bacon. Bacon jam.
I did. First time I've ever made bacon jam.
And it took a lot of bacon.
Yeah. It was a pound and a half. The recipe calls for a pound and a half of bacon. So that's a good bit of
That's
frying.
A lot of bacon. And that was probably for, I don't know, a couple of ramekin sizes of bacon jam.
Yeah. So you want me to talk about the recipe a little bit?
I mean, if you want to. It was so good.
So the reason I even looked this up is we went to that food tasting at the mall. It had lots of different...
Taste of Williamson.
Yeah. And it was represented lots of restaurants. But the wonderful Jim and Nick's barbecue had pimento cheese next to this bacon jam where they served it kind of together.
Yeah.
So that was my idea, was I had a few friends over and I made the pimento cheese I like to make, and then I wanted to try to make bacon jam.
Yeah.
So I'd never made this before, looked up some different recipes and found one that I thought sounded good and looked similar to the what we had had. So it was just called Easy Skillet Bacon Jam.
Okay. I'll put the recipe on our show notes if anyone wants to make it in our Pinterest page.
I love that it even calls for a cast iron skillet because...
Yes. Amen.
You know, we love our cast iron skillets. But anyhow, yeah, pretty simple in that it's mostly butter, onion, garlic, bacon, and then you add the sweetness of brown sugar, maple syrup, and apple cider vinegar. So it is like just a condensed, you don't eat a lot of this.
Yeah.
You just put a little.
Yeah. No, it's power punch with flavor,
but so tasty. And I love it with the pimento cheese next to it.
Good pairing.
Yeah. So, yeah, it seemed to be a hit.
Kudos. It was delicious.
And another thing I like about this recipe is when you put it in an airtight container, you can keep it in the refrigerator for 3 weeks.
Oh, my gosh. That's a long time.
So, I was thinking this would be a great thing to make around Thanksgiving or Christmas when you've got people in and out, popping in and out
that's
of your
good.
Home.
Or you have things to take to different events.
Yeah. And then you can just, you know, make it, keep it. In that, you know, already ready to go.
Yeah.
And I actually think, like, in the refrigerator, it gets, you know, cold and, like, gets a little bit harder.
Yeah.
So I think room temperature to kind of warm is best.
Yeah.
So you would have to, you know, heat it a little.
Yeah.
Anyway, that I liked it for that reason, too, because I thought, oh, I can see pulling this out. And if it makes it, you know... through 2 events, great.
Right.
Or 3 events, you know.
That was good. So we'll definitely put our stamp of approval on that recipe.
Uh-huh.
For sure. And then I made the Duke's Mayonnaise Chocolate Cake recipe. I've known about it for a long time, but I finally made it this weekend.
Loved it.
We had a friend's birthday to celebrate, and... Okay, I loved it for multiple reasons.
Well, first of all, can I say it was very pretty.
Thank you.
I mean, I guess you could just make a sheet cake or something, which is often what I do. But isn't it sweet when it's a layered cake?
Yeah, I think that was my first layered cake to make. Okay. And I only have 2 8-inch round pans. So mm-hmm. if something calls for 3, which many recipes do, then I have to alternate or, you know, come up with different ingredients and stacking. And
or I could bring one over just so I could see my nephew Jacob, but go ahead.
Well, that's true. So we had a friend's birthday to celebrate, and I was kind of tempted to not even tell people that it was the Duke's recipe because to me...
Do you think people are going to judge that it's got that in it?
Mayonnaise in a chocolate cake sounds weird,
but...
Truly brilliant. Here's why. It, of course, adds a ton of moistness. But when you're actually making it, you don't have to add any raw eggs. So, if you
follow... Because Duke's has egg whites, is that right? It has egg in it.
Well, it would have egg in it. I don't know if it's egg whites.
Yeah, yeah.
But, I mean, if it's already got egg in the mayonnaise, then it's not going to call for additional egg. And if you follow, if you're a rule follower and follow the old adage of don't eat the... Or don't lick the batter because it has raw egg in it because it'll make you sick. That doesn't apply to this recipe.
Awesome.
So, yeah. So, it won because it only needed a couple of 8-inch cake rounds. It didn't require additional eggs. And all of the ingredients I had on hand. Now, I did already have cocoa. So, cocoa would maybe be something that you'd have to...
But that's a pantry item that often will be in your home.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But if you had some confectioner sugar and cocoa, I think you'd pretty much have everything else. Vanilla and milk, you know, on hand. So, flour, of course.
That could be your snow day cake.
It was so good.
Get out of the house.
Duke's mayonnaise, good job. It was a fantastic cake. It was very moist.
Well, you'll have to put that recipe
up. So, I'll put that up.
Everybody.
And then also...
And I also made a new cocktail.
I was going to say, all summer long, I've been waiting for you to make this version of a bourbon slush. What did you do?
Well, now, I have one that I traditionally make that I call the bourbon slush. But you had actually put up on our Facebook.
Yeah. Well, I've been wanting to try it, and I...
A bourbon cola grenadine slush.
Right. Like a cherry Coke.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's exactly. Even though I didn't, for some reason, didn't put that together.
Yeah.
That's basically what it is. So it is Coca-Cola. It could be any kind of cola. But
yeah. Coca-Cola.
That's right. Bourbon, grenadine, and ice. That's it.
Yeah.
So glad I made it.
See, I was going to try it with cheer wine.
Oh, so now we've still got
to
try it.
So we may still need to try it.
Because that could be different. But I actually prefer my other bourbon slush.
Yeah, we didn't love this.
Because, and here's the reasons why, this was a little too sweet for me. With the Coca-Cola and the grenadine.
The cheer wine might work well.
Syrupy, sweet to me.
Yeah.
I just thought it was too sweet.
Yeah.
Like one I did find, you know... Just having some, but like you definitely wouldn't want to have a second. Like it was just
too
much.
Yeah.
And I also, this one is one you make in the blender with ice cubes.
Yes.
Whereas my other slush, you mix up the ingredients and freeze it.
And part of the awesomeness of your slush is the slushness. Yeah.
Whereas this one, didn't you think it had some slush, but also chunks of ice and it didn't get the right.
Yeah.
As good of a consistency.
Yeah.
So I don't know that I'll keep the recipe.
Ice matters.
On that one.
Yeah. I don't think we need to try that one again. Because your other bourbon slush recipe
is so good.
So, well, one other housekeeping thing before we jump into today's topic. We have one more week of our Enduring Southern Homes coffee table beautiful book giveaway from Eric Ross.
Beautiful book.
Eric Ross of Eric Ross Interiors has just willingly said he would give a copy of this book, sign it for a listener, and we want to see your Southern interior. So a favorite room of yours, a favorite corner of your home, of a friend's home, a relative's home, post the picture, use the hashtag Enduring Southern Homes Tour, and make sure and follow us and Eric on Facebook and Instagram. And you'll be entered to win. We're going to pick one winner in a week. And we've already seen a couple of really pretty
rooms.
Really pretty living room and a really pretty kitchen.
Yeah.
couple of pretty kitchens. So,
and we had said before, this could be like a family member's room. Obviously not something you took at the Biltmore or at a presidential home, but somebody that, you know, just a true home that you have enjoyed the room.
Yes, exactly.
So that's fun.
So be sure and take part in that. Let us see your beautiful home and show off your Southern hospitality online.
And make sure you use that hashtag or we won't know that you're entering. Yeah.
Okay. So today we are staying in the kitchen, so to speak, and we're talking about all things canning.
Yeah.
So this is an important topic as it relates to things of old, and also, as you're going to hear today, some resurgence of the old that is happening. So first, we wanted to kind of share an article I think you had.
Yeah, I found an article that I think says it better than I could say it.
Yeah.
But I was thinking even this week as I went to get tomatoes out of the garden to make a couple of recipes. There's so many ripe. In fact, I had some that had dropped off and rotted, you know, just because they all ripe so quickly at the same time. And that's with anything, you know, with that you have in a garden, green beans. And a lot of it comes at one time. So you have this mass harvest that there's no way you could eat it all right away. So you can share with neighbors.
I was going to say,
there's a lot of great things you can do, but one thing you can do is can
it. It could be the one time you stop by your neighbor's house because you've got some extra tomatoes, but you could also keep it for yourself if
for the
you
winter.
Can it. Yeah.
And so many of the things that we do in the South, not to say that we are the only ones that can, but many of the things that we do in the South are to be resourceful with what we have.
Yes.
And make the most of what we have. And so I feel like that's probably how canning came to be.
For sure.
And
that is how it came to be.
And then I also was thinking, just in the reference to caring about the nutrition of our food, when you're growing it yourself, you know the history that it
That's
doesn't
right.
have the pesticides, etc. So it's some yet another reason to help that go throughout the year.
Yeah.
So this article that I found, I'm just going to start by reading it. It came from the Farm Bureau of Tennessee in a publication that they have. So if you thought the practice of canning garden vegetables, meats, and fruit-filled jams stopped with your grandmother's generation, think again. While it's true that the know-how behind the art of canning is largely tucked away in the minds of older generations, a number of young people have taken an interest in home canning in recent years. They want to know where their food comes from and how it gets from field to can.
Yep.
Through the years, home canning became less popular as fresh foods became more available year-round and more women found employment outside the home, says Janie Burney, a professor in UT's Department of Family and Consumer Sciences in Knoxville.
Go Vols.
Give the Go Vols plug. In recent years, with increased interest in food additives, antibiotics, pesticides, etc., there's been a resurgence of home canning. So I think that's so interesting.
Yeah.
In fact, she notes that in 2016, the Tennessee Extension agents and volunteers made almost 3 million contacts with consumers regarding canning.
Huh.
Through news articles, educational exhibits, radio programs, and other media.
That's cool.
Yeah. So people are interested in this.
Yeah.
Again. And do you want me to give like a brief history
yes.
of canning? So canning has been in practice in the United States since the mid-1800s, a breakthrough in food preservation that spread to America after Frenchman Nicolas Appert, I'm not sure how to pronounce that, Appert, observed that food cooked inside a jar would not spoil unless the seals leaked. He developed a process of sterilizing and sealing food in airtight glass jars, and by the turn of the century, canning was a common household practice in America. Home canning ensured the availability of food year-round and reduced food waste. Canning clubs were among the earliest means of teaching canning and were first known as tomato clubs.
No way.
Yes.
That's hilarious. Especially since tomatoes was your example you gave just a second ago.
In 1910, Virginia Moore became the first Tennessee Extension agent to work with women and girls to develop canning clubs and improve the lives of rural women through education. Girls were provided a small amount of land to grow tomatoes that were preserved using the latest techniques. Boys had corn clubs, but tomatoes were seen as more suitable for girls.
What?
Since they were grown in home gardens and canning would be done in the kitchen. Now,
that's hilarious.
I think it's funny, and I think there's probably so many of our listeners, if they're women, are totally squirming.
Their skin
over
is crawling.
This.
Yes.
Because I guarantee you that there's many men who are the ones who do this in families as well. Many young women sold their home canned goods and used the money for college or family expenses. Their success led to the canning of many other foods besides tomatoes, including vegetables, fruits, jams, and pickles. Canning quickly became a household necessity, especially for rural families.
Wow.
So
that's great. So, yeah, I mean, in its simplest form, the canning process involves just placing foods in jars or similar containers and heating them to a temperature that destroys all the microorganisms that cause food to spoil. That's so funny that you found the French guy, too. I did, too. Like,
okay.
the history. Napoleon is what I read. Put him up to that. Like, Napoleon Bonaparte.
Wow.
You know,
okay.
Said, figure out a way. Because it was actually for, like, military application.
Okay.
And so he was, like, trying to, you know, figure out a way to keep the men fed for a long period of time. So there's two ways of processing food via this canning process. There's basically the boiling water bath method and then the pressure canner method.
Okay.
But I would say, like, before I get, you know, too deep into this conversation, this is a commitment. Like, this is all really important, and I'm on board with, you know, knowing where my food comes from and then having some way to save what's been grown.
Being a good steward of your what you have, right?
But there's a lot of equipment and method required. So I don't want to, you know, just make it sound like you just throw it in a jar and heat it up. Like, you really do have to study and figure out the methodology that works for you and then get the equipment that's required to go do it.
Now, I would say there's one other thing I want to add in here that, Larbeth, you and I haven't talked about, but it goes along with this, and that's fermentation of things, of vegetables, and that's really popular now.
Yeah.
Not only is it popular because there's been proven gut health benefits.
True. Yeah. All the GI research and people trying to heal their leaky gut.
Right.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of great benefits for that reason. So fermentation has gotten popular again here in the States and even in fine dining, which we can get into that in a moment as well. But fermentation doesn't require, I don't think, as much of the, like, there's not as much equipment involved and difficulty.
Yeah.
So I wanted to mention that and go into that a little bit more in a little bit because I got excited thinking about a couple of things I might want to tackle because it didn't sound hard.
Yeah.
Or like it would take tons of time.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, you can tomatoes, zucchini, green beans, peppers. I'm trying to think of other vegetables.
Probably anything, really.
You can can tons of fruit. Peaches, pears, berries,
some
cherries.
People even go ahead and make it into pie filling. Like they've already got it ready to be a pie filling.
Yeah. Yeah. Plums, grapefruit. I mean.
Yeah.
The
possibilities are endless.
Exactly.
And I think also there's ways that people can things with various spices and things like that too.
Yeah.
That has happened all over the world.
Right.
For many civilizations. Like, just, you know, I think about how sometimes our minds can get small of just thinking of like the green beans and stewed tomatoes and things that we saw in our family.
Yeah.
But, you know, in China, in Korea, in other places, they're canning too. It's
so
just a little different what they do, what they grow, but it's still the same process.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Well, so it's funny when you just started mentioning any sort of fine dining that uh-huh. would be interested in fermentation or canning, because I, in my mind, have our family history of who canned in our family, mm-hmm. and it was our poorest of family members.
Right.
So to me, that correlates.
Okay. So you're thinking, like, this is strictly necessity.
Yes. And it almost goes back to that conversation we had several episodes ago about grits. Grits on fine dining.
Right.
Menus. Yeah. It just seems so weird to me of, like, why are grits needed in a fine dining restaurant? But good grits, you know, as we talked about. Well, can complement well.
Can I talk about fermentation now?
Yeah.
So one thing that was kind of interesting, a while back I was listening to, and I'm sorry, I didn't look up his name. I kind of remember his name, but there is a chef, a famous restaurant called Noma, N-O-M-A
is
the name of the restaurant. And are you looking it up?
Yeah.
Now?
Yeah.
So the chef's name is, I'll know it when I hear it. Is it Renee?
Yes. It's Renee.
It starts with an R.
I don't know how to say it.
Redzepi.
Redzepi. Yeah.
So he's brilliant. We'll just start there. He's brilliant. And I was listening to him talk about Noma.
He's in Denmark.
Okay. I think he's in Norway or somewhere like
he's
that.
He's in Copenhagen, Denmark.
Yeah. So it's been for a while considered on list like the best restaurant in the world.
Wow.
And sometimes you'll hear it, you know, in the top five or whatever. But anyway, it's legit in those fine dining circles. And I was listening to him talk about what they're doing there now. But yet this was a few years ago.
Right.
And he said, we're getting hugely into fermentation. We have a whole area that we've devoted just to fermentation. And that made me go, really? That's interesting.
Yeah.
Because I will say I had never even heard of kombucha or kimchi. That's two words I had not even ever heard of until the last 10 years.
Right. Kombucha I've heard of. Just via Whole Foods.
Okay. So both of these things that are fermentation.
Right.
You know about apple cider vinegar
yes.
that's got the mother,
yes.
Bragg's or whatever. There's different ones, but they have the mother. It's got that milky look that's fermented.
Yeah.
You know about yeast and different things that are, it's a fermented thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yogurt, kefir, sauerkraut.
Yeah.
And then in other parts of the world, you hear about some different ones. Miso. You've probably heard of miso.
Miso soup I've heard of.
Right. So that's...
Okay.
Miso is a fermented,
oh.
I think from soybeans or something.
Okay.
So anyway, this fermentation thing is popular all over the world,
right.
but shows up in different ways. So in Germany, it may be sauerkraut. And in Korea, it's kimchi. So it's that's just a spicier cabbage fermentation.
Okay.
Anyway, all of that to say, I think with the proven benefits for gut health and, that kind of thing with the good bacteria,
yeah,
people are interested in that as well. And it can happen through canning.
Yeah. That's interesting. 'Cause that would be a little different than like a relish, I guess.
Well, pickled
yeah.
things are what I think of with relishes where it's got like a brine.
Yes.
Of, you know, the salt that's the preservative.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So, and, you know,
I'm starting my food or my palate has changed a lot in the last few years. And I'm starting to enjoy more relish type of foods.
Okay.
Because, you know, I know we're going to talk a little bit about, the most southern specific canned relish of all time at the end of our show. But I mean, I couldn't even stomach looking at some of these canned items when I was little. It just looked so, I don't know, like mutt.
I'm still not a stewed tomato person. I don't like the consistency of that.
Yeah.
There's something about stewed.
Yeah. Well, you know, relish is just basically chopped vegetables, fruits, or herbs, and it's typically used as a condiment. Or to enhance something, mm-hmm. you know, just a little bit. And then there's like chutneys.
Yeah.
Which are so, I've started to use more chutney type of type of things to marinate chicken.
Okay.
During the day to try and, I don't know, I'm so tired of all my chicken marinade recipes. So, yeah, but I mean, obviously the all-American hot dog with relish on top.
Yes.
Is super popular.
And people put different kinds of relishes in their potato salads. And
yeah.
There's so many different things you can do.
Yeah.
But one of the very popular things you would see for a Southern meal would be cornbread with pinto beans.
Yep.
And chow chow.
Chow chow.
On the side of it.
Yeah. So chow chow, not the dog breed, right?
Right, food. Yeah,
because honestly,
right.
When I started looking up stuff, I was finding more stuff on dogs when I look up chow chow. Yeah.
That's so funny. I don't think of it as that. But I hear that.
So
now.
I had to switch up all of my searching to say chow chow food or chow chow cans. Yeah. So chow chow was always in our refrigerator growing up because our Aunt Betty would have canned it herself.
And our mom loved it. So that would be one that she would really want to have on hand.
Yeah. But it, you know, it's a pickled relish. Let's see. What all would be in chow chow? Green
cabbage.
Red onions, or excuse me, cabbage. Yeah.
Onions, peppers, sometimes green tomatoes.
I was going to say.
Would use the green ones.
Or red, or both.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just throw
it. And I think with those things, a lot of people, you get to making it the way you like it.
Yeah.
If you wanted it spicier, or if you wanted it more, you know, more mustard, or.
Yeah.
Find your own way. And you would see it often mild or hot. Like some people like it to have a kick.
Yeah. Right. But also served cold.
Yeah.
So hot in temperature, spice-wise.
I mean, spicy.
But
Yeah,
but then served cold as, again, a condiment or a relish type of side item. I don't know. It's just so funny thinking about this because it's just, to me, it just looked like a hodgepodge of everything from the garden thrown into a blender and put into a can.
Well, but I mean, that may have been how it came to be. Like, we've canned things. We've still got a little left over. Let's make a relish out of this.
Yeah.
The Korean thing that's popular, the kimchi.
Yeah.
Is actually reminds me some, I mean, it's used a lot as in a way you would see a chow chow used. I've seen people put it on tacos.
Oh my gosh. Yes.
And different things like that. So it's like to give a little more flavor and kick.
When you said taco, I have seen what you mean now.
Kimchi
on
a taco.
Yes.
That's gotten really popular now.
Okay.
But that's just pickled cabbage that has different, you know, spices put in. And again, people make it in their own flavors and ways. But the main thing in that is the Napa cabbage.
Okay.
The Chinese Napa cabbage.
Yeah.
That's the main thing, but it also has some Korean spices and scallions and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I want to try to make some of that because it looked fairly easy to me, and I love condiments and things to add to make things a little more fun.
Right. Well, this does all involve a lot of chopping.
Yeah.
You got to get ready to chop for some chow chow. And now we have food processors.
True.
Our great Aunt Betty did not.
Did not.
So as I
was
reading through this, I was growing even more respect for her standing in her super
tiny kitchen.
With, you know, the slanted floor and, you know, standing there in her house slippers chopping all of these vegetables.
That's
for
right.
Tons of cans.
I can see why these clubs got popular. Can't you? Like a tomato club. It's so much more fun.
To get together.
To get together and talk and visit while you're doing all
this. Yeah. It'd be like a quilting club, you know?
Let's bring it back.
Join our Chow Chow Can Club. Girls only. Just kidding. We did find a Loveless recipe for Chow Chow because they actually sell.
And I've bought it before.
Oh, you have?
I have.
Okay.
And it's good. And I just wanted to say, like, no shame if you're going, ain't no way I'm standing and doing all this and dirtying my kitchen up. You can buy.
Hey, there's always an easy way out. We've got your easy way out for this one,
probably too. Your farmer's market.
Yeah.
They're probably selling lots of good canned things. But yeah, the Loveless Cafe, which is pretty renowned in Nashville as country home cooking. In fact, they even sell their stuff on their website.
Oh, really?
Lots of different products. So they can ship Chow Chow to you no matter where you live, in this country, at least. I don't know if they go overseas to those listeners, but you can buy their mild or hot Chow Chow. But yeah, I did find the recipe if we want to put that on the show notes.
Yeah, I mean, it's what? Cabbage, peppers.
They do use green tomatoes, salt, sugar, mustard, turmeric, ginger, mustard seed, celery seed, vinegar. Like, it's
so most chow chow takes about a month of aging, is what I had read.
Okay.
And then the sooner you taste it, the more vinegar-esque it's going to be. It's going to mellow a little over time.
Gotcha.
So, okay. You know, if you don't want that strong vinegar taste,
you're going to have to
wait
it
even longer before you open it and eat it. So, yeah, I mean, we just kind of wanted to touch on this because, you know, it's been, like we said, it's not necessarily a canning itself isn't a Southern tradition, but it's been very popular in the South for at least 200 years now.
Yeah.
Where people have been using this method to preserve their food. And even like we talked about on our heirloom seeds episode, that was episode number 28. If you didn't get a chance to listen to that, please do. You'll learn a ton. People want to know, like we said early on, where their food's coming from, and they want to follow that strand of foods that they like and preserve those seeds. So it's just kind of a responsible way to take care of the produce that you've worked hard to grow.
That's right. And it's nutritious. It's, yeah, you want to know about the nutrition of it, the purity of it, and all of that. And so that's an exciting way to to do that.
Yeah. So I might check out the Loveless Chow Chow. I have not tried that before, but...
Now, would your husband like cornbread with pinto beans?
No.
So, well, he wouldn't even like that.
No, he doesn't like any beans.
Okay.
No beans. But he likes cornbread, so... But see, now he's listened to this episode, and he's heard of everything that goes into Chow Chow, so now he's out.
It was kind of interesting. Was just caring... We were both caring for our dad, who had to have some surgery, and... he got so excited because I had some cornbread and pinto beans. Like, that's just...
So basic.
So basic. And that was quite exciting to him. So,
yeah. Yeah, so if you commit to the meal and your family doesn't like it, you can find a neighbor of an older generation. I'm sure they would love it. Take them a meal.
That is so true.
Anyway, okay. Well, that's going to do it for this week's episode. We hope you've been encouraged to maybe try something new. Like I said, we'll put all of these links in the show notes. And I am reconfiguring our Pinterest page this week. It got all haywire early in the summer and stuff got lost. So apologies to all of you Pinteresters out there that were following us that are like, where did all the stuff go? We'll be adding it back online in the coming weeks and continue to keep that as a place where we share recipes and articles and content and even more stuff that's related to Southern culture that we just want y'all to know about. So,
and we appreciate our listeners so much. And I just wanted to say, help us spread the word to people you think might enjoy this content and enjoy sitting at the table with us. And if you would, take just a few minutes and write us a review, hopefully a good one.
Yeah, five stars.
All of that is really helpful to help us spread the word. So we appreciate each of you.
All right, y'all. Have a great day. We'll see you here next time.